This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Hi, this is John. While we were at NDC Oslo, Kay Scott and I recorded a few short interviews. In this first one, we caught up with Damian Edwards and Rob Connery immediately after the NDC cage match, which pitted Rob's skills with Node.js and Socket.io against Damian on ASP.NET and SignalR. So Damian, how would you summarize some of the key differences?
First I got to apologize for my voice, which I've pretty much lost now. The distinguishing features, they kind of pretty much have the same feature set now, which is what we really just saw in the cage match. I mean, pretty much every time one of us did something, the other one showed how to do it in the other framework. So it really comes down to what technology stack you're comfortable with and just want to use, what makes you happy. If you want to use .NET, then SignalR is the obvious choice. If you're using Node, then Socket.io is the logical choice, and I wouldn't try and steer you away from that. So,
I would agree with that. I think the main difference is JavaScript all the way. And, if you like .NET, C#, that's good too. And that to me is the main difference. You have a conceptual break of like, okay, the server is C#, which, is kind of nice if you're thinking about, okay, now I got to do server code and you're writing C#, because I forget sometimes what I'm doing when I'm doing both.
Which is kind of interesting, though. Along the way, we looked at one thing where I was asking you, is it nice having JavaScript client and server? And you were talking about passing functions and stuff like that. And Damian, how does that work? Because you were saying a little bit about that you are using dynamic C#. How does that fit in?
So in SignalR, with our hub sort of abstraction, we let you do remote invocation of the methods on the client from the server. But we support more than one client. So while we showed the JavaScript client today for a web browser, we also have a .NET client, which I showed in my talk yesterday, which you can use in a WPF app or whatever. We have a Silverlight client, a Windows Phone client, there's an iOS client, there's a MonoTouch client. And so it doesn't matter what the client is, you need to be able to invoke the method in the client. So we have a dynamic clients property, which represents all the clients that you might want to invoke a method on, and then everything after that's a dynamic expression. So you would just say clients.methodName, pass in whatever arguments you want, and at runtime that gets turned into a JSON payload that gets sent down to the client, and then the appropriate client figures out what method to call on the client-side hub. So
one thing we were talking about, and you were saying they're pretty similar as far as hosting and all that, but it's the idea that what the value of both of them, or a big part of the value, is that with SignalIO and SignalR is the ability to kind of fall back gracefully. So, Rob, do you want to talk about like different protocols and stuff, support?
Yeah, with Socket.io, you're dealing with web sockets primarily, and it's a minefield. And the standard, as you mentioned the other day, Damian, is changing so often. And Heroku just flat out refuses to support it, and so do many other ISPs. And so what you need to be able to do is decide. And I was watching Damian's demo where he showed the actual request, the negotiation, when your client talks to the server, and it says, well, do you support these things? And then it goes down through a checklist. Node does the same thing, and you can actually configure it at runtime and tell it, Socket.io, that is. You can tell it, I don't want to use WebSockets, I don't want to use long polling, and I don't want to use Flash or all these other things. The idea is you want to be able to support as many browsers as possible, and for some silly reason, they go all the way down to IE5.5 and Flash, Firefox 3, Opera 3, I believe. So it's pretty insane how far back it goes. And I think SignalR is the same thing, right?
Yeah, so we have four transports. We start at WebSockets and then fall back through service end events, forever frame and long polling. And pretty much everything in the world will support long polling. If it supports AJAX, it supports long polling. So that'll get you a long way.
One feature that Socket.io has is you can have an acknowledgement sent back. After you emit an event on the client, you can say socket.emit, my event, and pass some data to the server. But if you want to react to when the server's finished, you can also pass in a callback function, and I showed that on the stage today. Can you do that with SignalR? Because that requires functions being passed back and forth. And how do you do that?
Yeah, so I showed that in the essence that the client-side hub can invoke methods on the server. And the client-side hub method that represents the server method returns a jQuery promise. And so you can just chain that with a .done and pass in a callback to that. And that'll get invoked when the server returns. And the server function can even return values. So I actually showed it returning a string. It can return a complex object, and we'll turn it into a JSON payload. And then your done delegate can get access to that.
So sorry if you said this, but is it treated as a string and like evaled later, or is it somehow parsed? You don't parse C# somehow into JSON. Okay.
No, so everything is JSON. So whenever you send an object from .NET down to the client, we run it through JSON.NET and it gets turned into a JSON payload. And when we wrap that with our own JSON sort of framing protocol that SignalR uses, so SignalR server and SignalR client can talk to each other because they both understand the same protocol. I believe Socket.io is the same thing. If you were to crack open the stream, you would see a bunch of sort of wrapper information that Socket.io uses for doing dispatching on the client and the server.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we showed was kind of the difference of the development stacks, right? So Damien's kind of the traditional, you know, Visual Studio, pulling things in via NuGet, and then at the end you pushed it out to Azure and had the site going. And debugging, I use the browser developer tools, and I guess Fiddler too along the way, probably.
I would, yeah.
You would. And then Rob, what did you use for your development stack?
I'm a fan of using text editors and consoles, only because managing plugins and IDEs, for some reason, you end up, for me, I am, because I'm a horrible programmer, that I end up like trying to figure out what is the IDE supposed to do again, and if you switch enough between IDEs, you tend to have a lot of confusion. So anyway, yeah, I've been using Sublime Text 2, which I really like. I've used Vim as well, and it's nice because the console is right there, and you can use it. But today I showed JetBrains WebStorm, and I think they just released version 4, and it's impressive. Hadi gave me a demo. Hadi Hariri from JetBrains gave me a demo of it, and it was darn impressive. And there was a former .NET programmer sitting next to me when he showed me that demo, and quite the detractor, and he was quite impressed with this IDE. And I only showed a little bit, like the debugging and the IntelliSense. It'll pick up prototype changes that you make, and it's fascinating stuff. So I'm thinking about using that a little bit.
What did you actually build during the session?
I didn't actually build anything. We had that planned. We were going to build like a ticketing, or some kind of travel flight tracker system thing, just a silliness. And I was going to use Backbone with a project called Backbone.io, and that takes your Backbone models and collections and basically syncs them directly to Mongo using sockets. And it's fascinating stuff. But what we actually ended up building was just some pings back and forth. We broadcast messages across to other clients. And I don't know, Damien's demo was pretty awesome, I thought.
Yeah, so I never really thought we were going to be able to build an app in an hour in a cage match situation, because I knew we were going to be giving each other crap the whole time.
That's right.
So we started out with Hello World, but it was sort of a real-time Hello World. So I spun up a background thread and just broadcast sort of Hello World in the current server time to all the clients that were listening, and showed that sort of in a list in the client while Rob was pontificating about life in the universe. And from there, we sort of went in and added some interaction. So we added some buttons and showed that when you click a button, you can either echo back to the person who clicked it or broadcast all users and the different mechanisms for doing that. So that's all we ended up building, but I think it was enough to sort of show that the foundations, which is what was important.
If we were to go further, you know, as far as Rob was talking about Backbone and stuff, and how, what would you use normally to build out an app further? Would it just be standard, like, you know, ASP client, or, you know, would you use something like Knockout or something on the client?
So I'd like to say I use all those things, but the reality is all my SignalR programming I've just been using, and I did today, like index.html and jQuery. I don't really get beyond that very much. And even Jabber, which is our sort of big showcase app for SignalR, is just it's web APIs for HTTP endpoints, and it's SignalR with HTML. I'm not even sure if there's any MVC views in there at all. Now, of course, most people have existing applications, and they're going to be integrating in some real-time, sort of sprinkling real-time throughout of it. And, of course, that's totally fine. And I even, Rob took a dig at me at the fact that I'm the WebForms PM. And I turned that around, and I actually went on to talk about a feature that we're actually going to have in SignalR I've been playing around with. For people who have WebForms applications, you know, everyone who's done WebForms has used an update panel at some point. You'd be able to drop the update panel that you could then, from your server-side code, sort of asynchronously tell all the update panels to refresh themselves. So it's like a server-initiated update panel refresh, which is kind of nice. And we can do that really easily with SignalR. So again, if you've got an existing application that you want to just add some real-time updating to without using polling, you can very easily do that without having to completely rewrite it.
You know, I was when I was trying to do the prep for the Backbone demo that I was doing, I was encountering a few bugs, and I couldn't find them, so I kicked up a debugger and I was stepping through the stack, and I went through the syncing mechanism that they use to sync to Socket.io, And it was all of 30 lines. And I'm thinking, you know, if you tell David Fowler, you know, get busy, you know, I bet you guys could fork that and make it work with SignalR. That would be kind of interesting. And then have some sort of translation in the background that, you know, sticks into Mongo or, you know, some kind of memory store, or Redis store, or whatever.
Yeah.
Even what's that database called again?
Raven.
SQL something.
SQLite.
SQLite. Yes. Thank you.
So, of course, I wanted to know if it was going to be web scale. And you guys both did some load testing. You were testing on your own laptops. But I'm curious, two things. One, how did you go about testing? And then two, what were the limitations you run into locally and all that kind of stuff?
I tested using a package called NodeLoad, and there's others out there. And you can test locally, but I found that the Mac only allows certain processes to happen, certain requests to happen. It stops it. At least that's what I found. But I was able to get 10 requests a second with 1,000 clients. Is that right? Something like that. And then a total of 10,000 requests over whatever it was. Yeah, and the test is pretty effective. It's fairly flat. And when it's happening in the background, and then what this node load thing actually gives you is real-time reporting. So you can open up a browser on a different port and then watch the results because it constantly writes to this HTML file. And you can sit there and the chart just marches across the screen.
And as you're doing that, do you see like hotspot? Do you see, are you able to profile and see like, okay, this one specific thing is slowing my app down?
Yeah. So if you see a problem on a particular request, because you give it a URL, hit this URL. And if you see a problem, you can actually go fine grain on it and you can use a loop function. And that I think steps outside of doing HTTP requests. And what it'll actually do is it'll take your module, whatever it is you're working in, and you loop it and hit it as many times as you want. And then you start doing a load unit test, if that makes any sense. So yeah, you can definitely do that.
So I showed SignalR has a performance harness called Flywheel that we use for doing load testing. And I drove load using the IIS WCAT web capacity analysis tool that you can download. So I simulated 1,000 clients, SignalR clients, and was pushing 5 broadcasts a second to them. So that's was doing 5,000 sends a second on my laptop. My CPU, the server was doing about 40% CPU. Most of the CPU was actually being used by the Flywheel graph being drawn using high charts we use, which is a great jQuery plugin for doing charting. It uses SVG, but it uses, you know, generally you don't run all that on the same machine. But we do know from our testing currently that SignalR will run into a wall at 30,000 sends a second due to contention in our in-memory message bus. So we're currently rewriting that for 0.6. And we have some very smart people on the ASP.NET team who are helping us with custom data structures and things like that. And we hope to be able to at least double, if not triple, that throughput. And you know, really max out the hardware. So I mean, even with the current infrastructure and the current sort of architecture, I've been able to saturate a gigabit NIC, sending 4 kilobyte messages to 1,000 clients, which is pretty good. I mean, if you can saturate your NIC, a gigabit NIC, you know, you that's sort of your aim whenever you're doing a load test, is sort of throughput. So really, you know, try and get your network saturated.
Isn't that the name of your cat, Gigabit NIC?
Gigabit.
We talked about this in the cage match, and I think some people are going to be wondering about it. You mentioned to me yesterday that Socket.io will stand on its own, and I think a lot of people were wondering about that. And I don't know if we actually talked about it, but you were showing, you know, ASP.NET website. Of course, you're going to need a website to serve a page, but you also don't. And I think that's fascinating. Socket.io works the same way, but I think it'd be interesting to know more about it.
Yeah, so SignalR for quite a while now has not had any dependencies on ASP.NET. It's actually just a standalone .NET library, and then we have a hosting layer where we plug in different hosts, because the default host that we pull down via NuGet when you say install SignalR is ASP.NET. We assume, like, you know, the vast majority of people would just be using an ASP.NET, but you can actually host it on whatever server you like, whether that be like an open source C# web server like Firefly or Kayak, which use raw sockets, or self-host using the HTTP listener in .NET, or Owen, if you want to host it on top of the Owen layer and then have whatever server you want underneath all that. We support all of that. So we actually have no ties to ASP.NET at all, other than the one hosting adapter we have for ASP.NET.
So we've been talking about a lot of similarities. What do you guys both think are kind of the biggest differences for you when you look at developing or hosting or whatever?
For me, I mean, yeah, functionally they're almost identical. I mean, I think at least. I think the community, the Node community has, I mean, a lot of momentum behind it. And one of the things we talked about today are the modules that you can use to extend Socket.io. There's a couple I was going to highlight. You can turn it into a message queue if you want. And I believe you can do the same with SignalR. But there's all these modules that you can use to extend it and do crazy things. I know SignalR comes with a lot of functionality out of the box that mimics most of what Socket.io does. However, I also know there's Socket.io has been around for a long time, and there's a big, big groundswell in it. So a lot of these open source guys are really pushing it hard, and I hope to see the same for SignalR.
Yeah, I mean, so the biggest thing for me that's different is SignalR is .NET. And so you sort of get all of the benefits that you would in any .NET programming. So Scott Hanselman does a really great demo on SignalR where he solves the Shakespeare million monkeys or infinite amount of monkeys problem using parallel compute. You know, just because .NET is threaded and the ASP.NET server is threaded, you can have background work happening without interrupting the fact that the server is also serving web requests. And so he uses the task parallel library to spawn off generations of virtual monkeys who slap on virtual keyboards. And then over time, you know, many thousands of iterations, they manage to type out a phrase of Shakespeare, all while it's updating a real-time dashboard via SignalR with the status of, you know, the monkeys typing on the keyboard. So sort of, if you're a .NET developer, it's one of the things that we sort of get for free without having to worry about, oh, okay, there's an event loop and I've only got one thread here. Right? If I want to do anything computational, I have to figure out how to marshal data across those things and spin that up in a different process and scale that out and all that type of stuff. So,
it runs on Mono too, doesn't it?
It does run on Mono. So SignalR, you can even clone it on a Mac and run make, and it'll build and things work. So Fowler made all that work.
David Fowler, Freakazoid.
What's the future hold for SignalR?
So we announced a short while ago that SignalR is being sort of evolving from a skunkworks moonlighting project of David and mine to a fully funded open source project from the ASP.NET team, which is great. So we're just in the sort of the beginning of making that happen. The next release, there'll be a point release 0.5.1 very shortly that'll add WebSocket support in the box if you're running on Windows 8 and a few other fixes. 0.6, we're going to focus on two things. One is rewriting the in-memory message store and our core architecture to improve performance, as I spoke about. The other thing is our hosting layer. So we're going to standardize on Owen as our hosting layer and sort of rejig all the hosting stuff so that it's kind of seamless for most users, but it'll be Owen-based if you want to do self-host. And then beyond that, shooting for a version 1, we want to have a good client story. So we have our own clients for JavaScript, .NET, Windows Phone, Silverlight. There are community-contributed clients for iOS, Monotouch, but we think those are really valuable too. So SignalR as a product, so we want to figure out how to incorporate those into the product. And we have other features that we want to add that we haven't done yet. So it's still some low-level transport stuff we want to improve. We want to get our cross-domain support supported across more of our transports and a bunch of other features.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I especially appreciate it just after finishing a grueling cage match to come and talk about it more. But I thought it was fun to talk about it while it was fresh on everyone's minds. Any last words, Rob?
I miss Kevin. Love you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Catch us for another edition of Herding Code.